Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make it fun. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Mark and will be continuing this series with part one of God Has Visited Us. So let's turn in our Bibles to Mark chapter 6 verse 30 as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So as we pick up here in Mark chapter 6 verse 30, it says, "And the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught." So in the previous chapter, we read there where the Lord had sent them out. He had sent them out and given them power over unclean spirits. He'd given them power to heal. He sent them forth to preach and to teach. And so now they've come back and they're giving him the report of the things that happened. And you know, we today, of course, in one sense, you know, can't gather around Jesus and tell him all that we're doing. But in another sense, we can, because we can do it through prayer. And we can come to the Lord, you know, every evening, if you will, and just, you know, sit before him and just tell him about our day. Lord, this is what we did, and this is what we didn't do, and this is where we succeeded, and this is where we failed, and Lord, we need you, and we're here to just, you know, get a fresh touch from you and to be strengthened by you. But how often do we neglect to do that? How often do we neglect to really just sit down before the Lord and pour out our hearts to him? It's so much easier sometimes, isn't it, to just sort of veg out. You know, you just come home and you're thrashed or you're wasted, and spiritually you feel like a big failure, and so you just plop down in front of the TV and try to zone out and not think about it. But what does that do? It just exacerbates the problem. You know, it's just the next day comes around and it's the same thing, and then you get into this habit and this pattern, and then, you know, it's just, it's not a good practice. But man, to just think that we can come to the Lord and just sit with him for a while. Just, Lord, here I am. And he said to them, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while." So these guys, things had been busy. It was a hectic schedule. It says here, "For there were many coming and going, and they didn't even have time to eat." So Jesus is looking at his men here and says, "You guys need a break. You know, let's get away. Let's go for a bit of rest." And so they departed to a deserted place in the boat by themselves, but the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him. And so their little break ended up not being a break, because the crowd beat them to the place that they were going. And Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them, because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. So, of course, if the disciples were exhausted, the Lord was even more so exhausted because he was the one who was doing most of the ministry. And I think it's probably safe to say that he was thinking he needed a bit of rest as well. Of course, Jesus was thoroughly human, being also thoroughly divine, but the divine didn't overrule his humanity. So he would have been weary from those long hours. And yet, here when he gets there and he sees the crowd, instead of saying, hey, you know what? I need a break. Can you guys come back tomorrow? Which is what the disciples, no doubt, were hoping he would have said, I would imagine. But Jesus can't do it because his heart of compassion is full for these people. And so he just, with that compassionate heart for them, he just continues right on ministering to them and begins to teach them once again. You know, I can identify with this a little bit because I know that there have been times when I have been in a similar kind of a state, you know, where I've been traveling maybe and just weary from the journey and you know, you need rest and you want a break, but then you see the people and you meet those hungry people, those people that are thirsting for the things of God. You know, some of the different countries I've been where people don't have the kind of access to great Bible teaching or, you know, good strong churches or the freedom to just, you know, float in and out. And so the people are hungry. And, you know, when you're kind of tired and ready to turn in, they're saying, wait, you know, let's go longer. Let's go for a couple more hours even, you know, and you're thinking, man, it's past my bedtime. Don't you people ever go to sleep around here, you know? But they're just so excited because they don't get this. And I've had those kinds of experiences where I've been so thrashed just because of, you know, like I said, the journey and all of those things. But yet your heart goes out and you think, man, you know what? I got to just do this. I just got to go the extra mile. I just got to, you know, I'm here. I'm not going to be here for long. It's like, you know, every time I go on a missions trip or, you know, one of those kinds of things, it's really, we just go and burn the candle at both ends. Man, we're going to just go for it while we're here. We're not going to worry about resting. We're not going to worry about that. We'll worry about that when we get on the plane. You know, it's a good way to get ready for a long flight back home. But again, it's that, you know, as we minister for the Lord, what the Lord does is he puts his heart in us. So it's not that I'm this guy full of all kinds of compassion for people, but it's that the Lord, you know, puts that in us and he gives us a little bit of an experience of his own heart toward people where you just look at them. I can really, this passage always speaks to me, but it speaks to me to some degree because I know exactly what it's like because the Lord has put that in me too. That's his heart. And I've so many times I thought, man, you just have compassion for these people. Lord, we need to do something. That's the thing that over the years, you know, has driven me and given me that sort of impetus to plant churches. Man, we got to get churches planted. These people need churches. We want to see them be able to have the same kind of experiences that we've had and the same kind of blessings that we've had. I don't believe for a second that what we've been allowed to experience is something that is just, you know, to be ours exclusively and cannot be exported. I think we ought to export this all over the globe. We ought to go as far and wide as we can and do as much as we can to bring to people the kind of experience that we've had, where you can freely worship the Lord and just be taught through his word. Be built up and strengthened in the faith. That's the shepherd's heart that God puts in us. It's what we see here in Jesus. And so, he, having that compassion, he began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and already the hour is late. Send them away that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat." But he answered and said to them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat. Now, a denarii was a day's wage. So they're talking about a substantial amount of money here. And we know the crowd was about 5,000 men, so it would have taken something like that. But of course, they didn't have that kind of money. So basically, they're saying, Lord, what are you talking about? We can't give these people anything to eat. But he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they found out, they said, 5 loaves and 2 fish. 5 loaves and 2 fish. 5,000 men, not counting women and children. We got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Now, I don't know if you've ever looked in like a biblical encyclopedia or maybe even a biblical dictionary. And a lot of times, they, you know, a lot of pictures, you know, depicting things from the ancient world. A loaf of bread was not like a loaf of bread like we think of it. It wasn't like a big, you know, 20 slices kind of a thing. A loaf of bread was just this little tiny, you know, it was more like a roll. So we've got 5 rolls and 2, one of the other gospel writers tells us, 2 small fish. So, you know, what are we talking about? Sardines? We're talking about, little perch, you know, probably like a little, you know, in the Sea of Galilee there, they have these nice perch. They're kind of look like a cross between like a crappie and a, you know, a large bluegill or something. But they had some of the smaller ones. And so this is what they bring back to the Lord. Well, we got 5 of these small loaves and we've got 2 small fish. And of course, to them, this seemed an absolute absurdity. But he commanded them to make them all sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in ranks, in hundreds and in fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed and broke the loaves, and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them all. So they all ate and were glutted. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fish. So those who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men, not to mention women and children. So probably more like 7,000-8,000 people. 5 loaves and 2 fish. How in the world do you feed that many people with that little amount of food? You can't do it. How could Jesus do it? He could do it because he's God in the flesh. And the amazing thing about this, now, this miracle is recorded in all 4 Gospels. It's one of the only miracles that you find recorded all the way through in all 4 Gospels. It's not the only one, but there's a few others. And, you know, we look at it, and it is indeed a great miracle, but we can easily miss something here that we need to see, and that is that Jesus is doing something here that only God can do. He's creating. He's creating. We read in the beginning that God created the heavens and the earth. And the word created there, it means, the Hebrew word is bara, and it means basically to bring from nothing. To bring from nothing. In the Old Testament, in the Genesis account, you have the Hebrew word bara, and then you have another Hebrew word asa that's used. And asa means to assemble. Assemble from existing material. But bara means to create from nothing, to bring into existence out of nothing. And here we see Jesus is basically doing what God did in the very beginning. When there was nothing, God brought, by the power of his word, he brought everything into existence. He spoke it into existence. And so that's what Jesus is doing. He's creating. That's such an amazing thing if you think about it. You know, we tend to think, and to some degree it's true, we tend to think that creation took place at the very beginning and then the creative event was completed, and then of course, we've just moved on from there. God having set everything in motion and, you know, built in the natural processes of reproduction and all of that. And for the most part, that's absolutely the case. But here we have a rare occasion of a new creative act. A new creative act where the Lord is bringing, again, something from nothing. So this is a radical miracle. This is a miracle that is connected back to creation. It's a miracle that would itself indicate the deity, if you will, of Christ. It would itself cause you to have to think, who is this person that creates out of nothing food to feed 5,000 people? So this great miracle takes place. But look what happens. So we read, immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and to go before him to the other side to Bethsaida, while he sent the multitude away. And when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray. I'm going to come back to that in a minute, but let's move on here to make the connection. Now, when evening came, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Then he saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them. Now, about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea and would have passed them by. And when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were troubled. But immediately he talked with them and said to them, be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid. Then he went up into the boat to them, and the wind ceased, and they were greatly amazed in themselves beyond measure and marveled. Now listen to this. For they had not understood about the loaves because their heart was hard. So this event that follows the feeding of the multitude is connected back to it. So here's what happens. Jesus does a miracle, a creative miracle. He does something that only God could do. And apparently they completely missed it. They're just like, wow, cool. Jesus made all this food out of those few loaves and these couple of fish. Man, what a guy. This is great. Sure good to have him around. You know, they didn't get it. They didn't get that, wait a second. You just can't create food. Nobody can do that. Who in the world is this? They were not in awe, as they should have been, of what had happened there. They kind of took the miracle for granted. It's like, yeah, great. Now Jesus, he feeds people too. That's a great thing. But the problem was their hearts were hard. Their hearts were hard. So Jesus now sends them away in the boat intentionally. They're out in the midst of the storm. And he comes walking on the sea, and he was going as though he would have passed them by. And this freaked them out. And they thought it was a ghost. Man, this is another thing, too, for me, that just, it's kind of a mind blower. You know, just think about walking on the sea. You know, who walks on the sea? Well, nobody walks on the sea. It just doesn't happen, does it? Now, you know, liberal theologians have looked at this and they've tried to dismiss it as, oh, you know, it was a delusion. The disciples they imagined this, or some have gone so far to come up with theories that, well, you know, he was walking along the shore. They thought he was out in the middle of the sea, but it, you know, he was just walking on the shore. And others have even said, I read something a few years ago where they had hypothesized that, well, you know, at that time of the year, it could have been that the lake had frozen over. And Jesus was actually just sort of, you know, he was walking on ice, really. He wasn't walking on the sea. Now, you know, what these liberals generally will tend to do is just completely disregard the text. There's nothing in the text that says about anything freezing. Nothing in the text that would indicate in any way, shape, or form that there was anything other than this radical thing, a man walking on the sea. It's a miracle. And that, of course, is the thing that the liberal mind is so opposed to. No, there couldn't happen. Miracles don't happen. And then you listen to them theorize about origins and talk about evolutionary theory and, man, talk about the need for miracles. You know, some of the stuff that they come up with, it's like, you know, it's much easier to believe the biblical account of things than to believe the fairy tales that so many of these guys embrace. Jesus was, again, demonstrating his authority over all things, demonstrating his deity, if you will, and he's walking on the water. And we'll read later, of course, that there's Peter himself has a moment of walking on the water as he steps out of the boat. But so the point here that Jesus was making, it wasn't just simply, hey guys, check this out, I can walk on the water. Isn't that great? No, he's doing this to arrest in them this realization of who he is and what's really going on here. Their hearts are hard and they haven't really embraced the full implication of the miracle of the loaves. And so it's kind of a shock thing. He's going to shock them. And we know that it did have that effect on them, just as he intended it to. Now, back in verse 46, after this feeding of the multitude, and as he sends them away, notice what it says about Jesus. And when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray. Departed to the mountain to pray. And again, it's taking us back to what we were saying a few moments ago. Just that privilege of prayer, those opportunities that we have to pray, that we can go to the Lord, that we can come to him with anything and everything and all of our problems. And, you know, Jesus, if you think about Jesus in who he is, in his divinity as God the Son, you know, on the one hand, you would think, well, you know, why would Jesus need to pray? I mean, you know, after all, he's God. And of course, he was God, God the Son. But he's also a human being. And in many instances, he's acting as a man to set an example for us men. He's showing us that this is what men are to do. Men are to pray. Men are to not be independent, self-reliant, as we oftentimes think we're supposed to be, or maybe we're taught that we were supposed to be. But we're to be God-dependent. We're to be God-reliant. And that's really what prayer is. Prayer is a demonstration of my dependency on the Lord. It's an admission that I need God's help. It's an admission that I need God's work in my life. I need God's strength. I can't do this thing called life on my own. Now, some people are too arrogant to admit that. For some people, that's something they'd never want to admit. They never want to say, I can't do it. I need help. Because, you know, to ask for help or to imply that I need help, well, you know, that's a sign of weakness and we're not weak. You know, we're strong. We can do it all. But the fact of the matter is nobody can do it. And anybody who's pretending that they can do it is just doing that. They're just pretending. And even though they might not be calling out to God or, you know, looking to him for strength, there's some other thing, there's some God, one that they themselves have erected, whatever it might be, that's what they're really looking to for their source of strength. But how foolish when we can go to the true God, the living God, the one who made us, the one who can strengthen us and will strengthen us and wants us to come to him. So Jesus gave us that example here once again of a man who went to God in prayer. And that's what we need to do.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Mark in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part two of God Has Visited Us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled God Has Visited Us. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BBM128. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/PastorBrianBroderson. Also on Twitter at twitter.com/BrianBroderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.